everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Ship Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Lockman, and I'm very excited today to be joined by Bart Farrell. Bart actually runs the Data on Kubernetes community. And Bart, for those of the listeners who don't know you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. Very great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. As you said, my name is Bart, which for starters is already, I guess, a little bit unique, not very common. But anyway, I'm from California, from Northern California originally, but I've been living in Spain for the last 9 years. And I basically got into tech around 5 years ago. I always have to explain this as, you know, full disclosure. I am not a programmer. I'm not a DevOps. I'm not a systems administrator, DevSecOps, whatever you want. I come to tech from, we could say, the human side, and I got into tech 5 years ago. I got recruited by a British software development company that had a development center here in Bilbao, which is in the Basque country in the north of Spain. And since then, I have been much, much closer to tech. I worked there for 3 years doing talent management, starting organizing events, starting communities, about a lot of different things. And then about 2.5 years ago, I started working on my own as a freelancer and being involved in different projects related to audiovisual production, still doing talent management as a freelancer in a digital marketing agency, and other random assortment of other things. And last year, a good friend of mine, Demetrius Brinkman, shout out Demetrius, who had previously started or is still running the MLOps community, was invited to start the Data on Kubernetes community last year in July. And so he got it kicked off. But then a few months later, because of some personal commitments and things like that, he contacted me saying, "Hey, would you be interested in taking over?" And I didn't have to think too hard about it and just kind of jumped right in. And so here we are right now.
Perfect. Yeah. What really amazes me about Bart's story is that Bart took two leaps of faith back to back. And so there's no one road into technology. There's no one road in and no one road out, right? It's definitely people spend time, different levels of time. But Bart not only went from a non-technical background into helping organize technology communities, Bart is in a crypto community, what I would call a crypto community. So Data on Kubernetes, I'll just try to frame it up for some of the listeners. So Kubernetes might be the shiny penny. It's becoming more mainstream, but an area that's still on the bleeding edge is persistence or data. And that's actually very hard. Since the platform came out 6 years ago, data has been a weak point. It's actually, the platform wasn't designed for persistence. Now there's been a lot of advancement, but Bart dove into it. You went from no tech or a light technical background and then straight to the deep end, which is very inspirational. Can we talk a little bit about just maybe some of the ebbs and flows of that journey? Like, there's lots of ways to contribute, and Bart is an excellent example of that.
That's a really good point. I mean, like, and you know, to backtrack a little bit as well too, as to why, because seemingly, and to give even further background about myself, and we can kind of see the contrast, but also understand why maybe it wasn't so strange for me to get involved in this space. Taking into consideration the very point you just mentioned, that it's quite niche, is that my academic background, I went to the University of California at Santa Barbara, and I majored in religious studies, which is not a common thing to study at all. And a lot of, so I'm very accustomed to being an outsider and perhaps being in sort of different spaces, we could say. And also the constant thing of, you know, people say, "Well, why are you going to study that? Or how can you apply that?" Well, there are a million different ways you can apply that. And we'll probably see a couple more along the way. But that's why for me, being involved in that, and then I got my master's degree in Near Middle Eastern studies, because I lived in Egypt, studying Arabic there. That's where I met my wife, my partner. She's from Spain. We met there. And so me, I've kind of always been, you know, because that kind of background and then going into a different kind of background, like being in different spaces has been somewhat comfortable for me. And on top of it as well, is that a lot of it I relate to is that when I arrived in Egypt in 2009, I really didn't know a lot of Arabic. And when I arrived in Spain in 2011, I really didn't know a lot of Spanish. So I spent the first 2 years living with my mother-in-law, and she doesn't know English, and I didn't know Spanish. So this learning experience of like kind of really starting from zero is something that I'm fortunate enough that it wasn't the first time, and it's not the first time that I've been kind of doing this. So when I started, you know, looking into this idea of like, okay, data on Kubernetes, I had some resources, because the company I had worked for we started using, they had started using Kubernetes in around 2018. And by chance, my desk was next to the IT ops area. And so I was with everyone when they were starting. You know, they were, everything had moved to, they had done a migration to the cloud in 3 months with Azure. And so working with that whole tech stack and then also the big data stack of Hadoop, Spark, Storm, Elastic, Hive, all these other, all these different technologies, then started mixing these things in the Kubernetes space. So it wasn't the first time I had heard about Kubernetes, and it was also very helpful because I already had people who I could reach out to that have been extremely supportive and have also been in the meetups. So then, like I said, once kind of getting in the space, getting a better idea what this is all about, and understanding that at the end of the day, as much as we talk about technological things, we're talking about basic problems, all right? Like, I have a pain point. I have this data. I need to move it, or I don't want to move it, or what's the best way for me to be treating my data, to be testing the quality of my data? And at the end of the day, we are talking about frustrations, about people trying to get to the bottom of things, about making things better. And so in that sense, those are spaces where I feel very comfortable with. Obviously, there are technical limitations that I have, but I'm very, very lucky to be surrounded by some fantastic people that are on my team. I'll have to give some shout outs later that make that part easier for me, or that at least I know people I can delegate to help me out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Like, it's almost through learning through osmosis, which I mean, you hit every one of the key distributed systems that are out there. So certainly you've learned a lot in the last several years of your journey. I think we'll talk about where data, like how people get involved with DOK in a little bit, but let's talk about a little bit more of the human problem. So one of the things that people might be a little shy, and especially I could be shy about, this could be therapy with Bart now, Bart the therapist. You've done two huge, like I keep reiterating that, you hit the reset and started again twice in very rapid succession. Let's say I had this question for you. As an engineer, a lot of times we get comfortable with what we know, and change is hard. And that's the biggest part of change, like culture or organizational change. As a person, let's say I had no idea what the next big technology is, and then some other technology came up. It doesn't have to be Kubernetes related. Like, what would be your advice for me to get over my fear of the unknown? You did it better than anybody I know. So give me some therapy, Bart.
That's awesome. I mean, like, that change management is such a huge topic, and it's something that I have unfortunately not researched as much as I would have liked, that I would like to, because how do we define when folks are really ready to make a change? You know, what are the necessary steps to say, like, okay, this is the old way, we're going to be making the transition to a new way? And that's interesting, because that's exactly what we're talking about in our community a lot of the time, is we have people that are DBAs, that are DevOps, that are software developers. We have front end, we have back end, we have systems administrators, we have all these different kinds of backgrounds. And so what we're really trying to do as a community is to define, what does it mean to be a data engineer or an SRE who's gonna be running stateful workloads on Kubernetes? And those things are difficult. So once again, a lot of what the community is about is to say, like, look, you gotta have a can-do mentality. You have to understand that it's simple as this, right? If you think about in your case, can you think about other changes that you've had to make in your life apart from software, whether it's from moving to a different city or, you know, moving? Can you think of an example?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I like how this is making the problem more human, right? It's more than, oh, I don't understand this technology. It's, yeah, absolutely. I think most of us have moved around a little bit, and most of us have changed jobs. Most of us, you know, go through the ebbs and flows of life. So there's always change, right?
That's it. Yeah. But understanding that, like, those changes are going to make you a better person, a more flexible person with the ability to tackle a different set of problems. And so I think what a lot of it's about is to say, like, okay, well, if you've done this, you can do that. And so a lot of it is about building up confidence. And then something that we encounter again and again, and actually in our most recent meetup, we talked about a lot, is the issue of imposter syndrome. People are so, like, and I understand, like, and believe me, I suffer from it as well too, which is why I'm always as clear as possible, as quickly as possible, about my technical limitations so there aren't any misunderstandings. I'm not going to tell people that, oh yeah, when I was spinning up this cluster, you know, this is what I did, or that's, no, but I can refer you to someone who has done that, and they can probably help you out better. So I think a lot of what we are talking about here is, okay, a lot about change management is not having to make such a big jump. Is that, how can we break that down? Well, what's the first step to start getting there? So a lot of what we're trying to generate in our community are resources, are conversations, so that people don't have to feel, we often say, like, you don't have to go outside of your comfort zone. You have to expand your comfort zone. And you do that in bite-sized portions. That it's not that you have to just jump right into something else. That depends on the mentality. Some people don't mind that. But to make it more comfortable for people so that this doesn't seem so foreign or so difficult, because a lot of times even, as we were saying previously, you know, Kubernetes has now been around for some time, so it's becoming more accepted at enterprise level. We see more and more companies making that change. Some companies are still resisting that for a lot of different reasons. But we're even getting to the point where it's becoming normalized. We could say even mainstream, depending on who you talk to. But some people still say, whoa, 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 that's definitely over my head. Like, you've been working in tech for 15 years. Think about all the different changes in technologies, new versions and updates that you've had to work with. It just kind of looking at it another way. There's a cultural shift. There's a paradigm shift. Sometimes I think also the cloud native shift, about talking about moving away from vendor lock-in, that is also like a difficult thing for some people because they've always been used to having one provider for one technology or another. But like I said, I think a lot of it about is in the same way as Scrum, you take a big thing and you reduce it down into, you know, user stories, more bite-sized pieces. And I think it's the same thing with any other kind of change you might want to make in your life.
No, very eloquent. It's the very agile or scrum methodology that incremental success breeds success, right? And so you could apply that to change management too. If you're able to accomplish just a little bit at a time, you're building confidence. I think a lot of folks suffer from imposter syndrome. And that's it, right? Like, do you have to, it's the analogy, do you have to boil the ocean at once? Taking company politics out of it. Cause a lot of times bringing change takes a long time. Like, it doesn't happen overnight. The bigger the firm, the more stakeholders. It's a long play. It's not a 2-week change. As a software engineer, we had another guest on, David Studio, that he said, also said it pretty eloquently, that things take time. Things take more than 2 weeks, right? When dealing with people. Kind of asked more therapy with Bart. I like this. When do you stop becoming an imposter if you have imposter syndrome? Super abstract portion. It's just, as a sufferer of imposter syndrome, when can I say I'm not an imposter anymore?
It's really good that you mentioned, because like just yesterday I was talking to somebody who I consider to be an extremely talented engineer who has these brilliant ideas and then kept repeating, you know, that but I feel like I'm not good at anything. I just feel like I'm an imposter. I think possibly becomes that happens as well too, is that, you know, that there are some people out there that are really, really loud, but then you start, you know, scratching the surface and there's not much underneath. And so that can kind of be a threat to some folks, that, you know, that feeling that you have to have like a big personality. But I really think that too often we focus on the things that I think it's a question of, you know, reflection, that we focus too much on the things that we don't think we're capable of instead of the things that we are capable of. And a lot of times, you know, we don't give ourselves that pat on the back or just kind of tracking our progress and being like, look at all the things that I have done, you know, like, and I'm someone that is also, I definitely would say that I'm probably too hard on myself sometimes. And, you know, that you're your own worst enemy, or as they would say, in, you know, that Offspring said, I'm just a sucker with no self-esteem. But I think that really we need to be more proactive about documenting the things that we're doing well, about giving recognition to others who do things well, because of creating a culture of that kind of recognition, so that we really kind of build ourselves up to see, like, look, I don't have to be a superhero, but there are things that I definitely do well and that I have confidence that I can speak about them. And also, once again, I would say this too, is that, you know, this Kubernetes space, CNCF, open source, all this kind of stuff, I have never in my life seen such an open and welcoming community. And I want to give a shout out as well to Dan Pop from the Popcast, because in one of his episodes, like, he you know, is go out there, join a SIG. After this call, I'm going to have my first meeting with the Contributor Experience SIG. And once again, is that something that I never would have thought about doing, but it's because you message these people and they respond in such a kind way that all the thing about imposter syndrome should dissipate quickly. But I really think, as a personal exercise, that is very healthy. You don't need to build up an ego, but just write down a list of the things that you have achieved. Simultaneously, if you want to, also be conscious of the things that you would like to improve or the things that you know you will delegate. I'm very, very clear about the things that I'm not good at. And so that's why I try to surround myself with a fantastic group of people who can help me out.
Yeah, perfect answer. And it's something just hard to wash away. Funny, I actually, like you, I joined my first SIG a year ago. For the listeners who don't know what a SIG is, it's SIG, Special Interest Group. So it's a way for people to start contributing to a board's specific task or a specific goal. And usually I used to have this notion that there was an air, like, oh, you have to be someone very important or someone very special to join a working group or a SIG. That actually was not the case. I was joining a sub-foundation of the Linux Foundation, so like one like more specialized group of folks. And that was it, right? Like, we all have different skills that we bring to the table, and the collective, you know, we're helping each other learn. I'm getting to interact with people that I know are competitors to my firm, which is pretty funny, that, you know, putting the human face to them. Another question I have, because you have such a good background in talent management, is, you know, as I think a big challenge as an engineer is that, how do your accomplishments follow you around? So I asked this question I'm curious, because you have the most talent management experience, a human-centric experience. Part of what we do as an engineer is we have to pay the bills, right? Like, you know, we have to refine our skills. We have to go and, you know, hopefully we better the craft. But also there's a monetary incentive for us to do certain things. My Audi lease doesn't pay for itself downstairs. So how can your accomplishments follow you around? Like, how can you get people to know the work? And that might be part of where the imposter syndrome falls in. But
that's a good point. And I think that's a super good point. And also I struggle because I see people struggling with that a lot. You know, it doesn't mean that everyone needs to give a talk in front of 50,000 people. You know, like, that's okay. I think it's statistically proven that most people would prefer to swim with sharks than speak in public. You know, I don't know what it is exactly, but the point is that, you know, it doesn't, the point is like, use a little bit of creativity. Don't write down limitations, write down options. You know, like, okay, maybe I don't want to give a talk, but I can write a good document. I can support somebody else to prepare their talk. I can, and that's also, once again, I think the beauty of kind of being in, like I said, in a SIG is that, like, there are tons of different ways that you can contribute. In my case, it's probably most likely going to be translating stuff from English to Spanish, et cetera, et cetera. But like I said, I think that there might be a characterization of a stereotypical definition of, oh, this is what success means, is going out and doing this or doing that. But in reality, I think there are so many different ways. And also as well, too, like, seeing people that are, they're like, okay, I'm not going to give a talk for 50,000 people, but I'm going to go help this NGO with their webpage, and they're going to be eternally grateful. And, you know, that's a way that I can have an impact. That also enhances my personal brand, or being able to show what I've done. Often what we often tell people as well too is, like, find some kind of personal project, get your GitHub repo updated, get something out there. And once again, it doesn't have to be jumping into, I'm going to write a book for O'Reilly. Okay, obviously there are people that are at that level. But, you know, like I said, start small, get a blog, try something. And maybe the first thing that you do isn't going to necessarily work. I can talk about lots of things that I've done that haven't worked, but I think people need to understand that that's also part of the process. There's going to be some trial and error. There's going to be some give and take, but just be patient and kind to yourself. And if it does, and also don't expect it to necessarily work on the first time. That's another thing too. And also get people to give you feedback. I would also say that's very important too.
Oh yeah. You know, I live in the generation of instant gratification. So, but it takes time. You're making an investment in yourself. And that feedback is super important. That's something that I had to get better at receiving. I used to be, as an engineer, I used to get feedback maybe once a month during code review. And as I became more senior, I started participating in more code reviews, and then we switched to Agile. And so it was like 2 or 3 week sprints. And now as a people leader, I get feedback like throughout the day, which is like, it's something that's, it took me my whole career to like get to accept it, right? Say, no one likes to hear criticism. We like to hear praise, right? We're human. But good point, right? Like, part of making yourself better, that's just the ability to accept feedback. And as an engineer, a lot of times you hang your hat on your solution. Like, I wrote this, we wrote this, you know, this is it. But the only constant in technology is change, right? Change is about to happen. So take the conversation a little bit different. Now I'm curious, like, for the listeners, data on Kubernetes. So as a crypto space and a very rapidly evolving crypto space, we can kind of take a peek behind the scenes and see what's going on. So maybe talk us through a little bit of the journey on the inception of data on Kubernetes, the community, and And then, like, what's currently going on, and how do you start building momentum in such a crypto space?
Very good. So essentially, the community was started by, big shout out to MayaData, Evan, Murat, Brian, Eric. There are a ton of people at MayaData, Nisanta. Anyway, great, great people that have been lucky enough to be in contact with, Kieran as well. And they basically realized that, you know, there is the potential. Why are we leaving this topic of data outside the Kubernetes space? You know, like, why are we not bringing this more into the fold? And they also realized that they weren't the only ones that were thinking about it. And what's also interesting too, is that the more people that I get in touch with, they're like, you know what? I've been thinking about this for a while as well. Like, why has it? And so I'm glad that there is a space where people can have these conversations. So initially, they realized that, you know, there was a potential to get this going. And so with the help of some of the folks also at DataStax and Percona, they said, like, look, I think we can start getting people that can share experiences, because a lot of it is like, don't tell me if I could do this. Show me how you have done it, what works, what didn't work. We also have to keep in mind as well, too, the question of use cases. In some use cases, from what a lot of folks tell me, there are certain use cases where it's going to be better or might be more advisable to keep things stateless. In other cases, go ahead and, you know, do it stateful. So that's kind of how this got going. But basically it was like, how can we get – are there enough practitioners out there to start having meetups where people can share these experiences of things that have worked, of things that haven't worked, in a vendor-neutral, non-sales pitch, and focusing on open-source technology is also a very important part of our community. And so that was kind of it. And so then through that of realizing, like, wow, we actually have people – not only do we have people in – I couldn't even tell you how many different countries we've been in touch with, but it's well – we've had speakers, I think, from well over 15 different countries. So it's not just something that's happening, let's say, in Silicon Valley or only based in the United States. And also, we're now expanding into other countries. We're doing meetups in Brazil and Portuguese for folks who prefer to have that. We are doing stuff in Spanish, hopefully going to start doing stuff in Mandarin. So seeing that this is something that is happening on a global level, which gives us much more confidence that, like, okay, we're not the crazy, you know, lost prophets in the desert, that there is actual substance to this and we can present things that are concrete. The technology is always wonderful, but always when we can apply it and see it on the ground functioning in a use case. It's not just being a cheerleader like, this could possibly work. No, no, no. Tell me how you did it. Tell me how you created, you know, how you ran data streaming. Tell me about how you created this operator. Tell me about how container attached storage works. These are the kind of things that like I said, is that once you say, like, no, 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 I'm not crazy. I can give you an example. And also my customers are happy with this. That I think is what really gives a lot more credibility. But really about there obviously was a risk in kind of, once again, this leap of faith of getting this started last year. But I think since then, the feedback has been very, very positive.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's like, you know, show me, don't tell me. A little bit, I think coming to the back third of the podcast, one more, this is something that I struggle with. It's dealing in a crypto space. A lot of times you're figuring stuff out for the first time, so you might not have a complete solution, right? How is that? So like, even tiny, I'm going back to our incremental gains or tiny gains. This is going to fall into imposter syndrome. I think you have you've laid out a very good framework. Let's say I don't have this is fictitious now. Let's say I don't have the complete picture. Like, you know what? I want to participate in data and Kubernetes, but I don't have an end-to-end solution. Is it acceptable to show partial work? Like, hey, I still have a very minute part of the puzzle.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And absolutely as well too, what I would like to say as well is that you know, and as well too, because when I got started out, I was like, you know, do we only want cheerleaders for the cause or, you know, but the thing is really is that anything, as long as it relates to, and once again, if Kubernetes is already big enough, data is even bigger. So we have tons of different things that we can talk about there, right? But like you said, is that it doesn't have to be, because that's the thing is that incomplete story, that's where our community comes in and helps that person finish that story. You know, like that's what that's about. And the other thing as well too, is we want to hear from folks that say, you know what? No, no, we had the option of stateful or stateless and we went for stateless. We want to understand the logic behind that to understand how we can, you know, make our arguments clearer or make our case stronger. But also, once again, is that we need to hear from absolutely everybody. If it's just an echo chamber of always the same thing, then we're going to end up being blind, and that's not healthy. So it's very, very good for us. And the thing is, we don't need people, you know, pulling out weapons to be fighting to the death over this kind of stuff. But we want to encourage a comfortable, inclusive space where people can have these conversations, and where it doesn't, you know, end up in a brutal fight. So I think I hope that we're that's definitely the message, and I really want people to take that to heart, because we don't mind having someone coming on saying, you know, we got to this point and we realized, no, we're going stateless. And then we'll obviously want to hear alternative voices to say, well, I maybe would have done it this way based on my experience, on my use case. So like I said, but all opinions are welcome in the community.
That's awesome. I think just abstracting away from data increment is only I tried to be a little more concrete there, which is good. I think almost all engineers suffer from that problem. Like you said, I've never heard it said so eloquently, let the community help you finish the story, right? Because again, if you take a look at it as someone whose salary as an engineer, my salary depends on me doing something. A lot of times you feel like you're in, you know, a little silo. Like I've been hired for my expert. This is what took me like my whole career. Also, like until I made a more senior engineering role, I used to think that I have to complete it because this is why I get paid. And if I ask for help, I'm not going to get paid. Now, you know, as I became again, like my it's kind of related to my journey. There's nothing wrong with asking for help or even getting more opinions. I think that's extremely valuable, and it's a skill that a lot of engineers it might be a little bit ashamed or struggle with. And participating, I think it made me a better person participating in these communities because it's, you know, you get a lot of different ideas all at once. It's like, oh, usually in a company, you're all marching to the same beat, right? Even if, let's say you and I are working on the same team. Well, you and I work for the same employer, you know, so most likely. Versus you get a lot, like you just get, it's like going from like elementary school to middle school to high school and then to university. Like the number of people who are from different spots can come together. So perfect. Perfect answer. So last question I always like to ask that I think you'll have a great answer to it is, you know, let's say that it's an intrinsic question. So let's say you were walking down the street and you just met young Bart just the day out of UC Santa Barbara and with current Bart. So just you're now, you're living in Bilbao for a while. And so you caught UC Santa Barbara Bart at graduation. What would you tell your past self? Give me any piece of advice.
That's a really good, yeah, and the thing is that the first is that the first time that I've thought about this. I think though, really, what I would say is that, like, don't worry, you're gonna be fine. And honestly, like, that's been the thing is, like, I graduated college, and the first thing I did was I worked in a restaurant in New York, and I was also playing music in the subway to make money because I didn't make a lot of money working in a restaurant, and thinking, suffering from this, like, what am I gonna do with my degree or how this is gonna work? Everybody just needs to know, like, you're gonna be fine. Like if you trust, if you create, like that's the thing as well too. For me, it's so easy. It's like, you know, we have this data on Kubernetes community. Create a community for yourself. Surround yourself with folks that appreciate you for who you are, who trust your decisions, who believe in you. And I'm very lucky that in my case, it's been my family. So that's why I mean, I probably if I now I could have probably told the, you know, 22-year-old Bart, it's a good idea to learn some programming. That wouldn't have been some bad advice. Don't worry about it. But if you get a chance, learn a little bit of programming. That would have been smart. But mostly, I would just say, you know, trust your instincts. Understand that you're not going to get everything right the first time. That it's been a little bit of trial and error. That, you know, you may not have the most linear approach of getting to things, but you still get there. So that's kind of how I would summarize it.
That's awesome. Yeah, like it's very human-centric advice. Lastly, for folks who want to get involved with data and Kubernetes or DOK, like what's the best way for them to get engaged and get involved?
Good. All right. So we've got tons of different ways. We got the meetups that are on every Tuesday. I got to say this though, is that in March when we're also gonna have Tiffany, which is exciting. We will. I want to do March Madness. So in March, I'm gonna do two meetups every week. So we're gonna have and try not to overlap topics, obviously, so that we'll have different offers on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Same thing in April as well. Gonna go really, really hard the next few months. And so if folks want to get involved, we've got our webpage, dok.community. We're also on Twitter. We've got our Slack. Pretty easy to get in touch with me. We also, you know, we really try to identify a unique sort of character in terms of our community. So we also do think we have a wonderful graphic recorder who does art. So if people like art or more visual thinkers, that way they can see a visual summary of what the speakers have been talking about. I'm also pretty shameless, and so I also make hip hop beats. So I do raps, like summarizing the things we've been talking about. So we try to create like as many different resources to make it more comfortable for people coming from different backgrounds. And we're only going to try to do that more. All right, like I said, if you're a DBA, if you come from a different background, we want to be able to give you all the support that you need to make that transition more comfortable. But we're always interested in speakers. If folks don't want to appear in a meetup, we can do a podcast. We can do a debate. It doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are, what language you speak as well. For folks that don't want to do it in English, they can do it in any language they want. We're happy to facilitate that. So I insist, like, our objective, I hope the message is understood, that we want to be as welcoming as possible in the same way that I've been welcomed in this whole Kubernetes open source CNCF space.
Awesome. Well, Bart, thank you so much for your time this afternoon in lovely Spain. So yeah, until next time, listeners, this is Robbie with ShipTalk. Cheers.
Thank you.